Hello, and welcome to This Week in Wealth. And no, your ears are not deceiving you. I am most definitely not Alex Steger. So sorry for anyone who enjoys hearing his British accent first thing in the morning. I am CityWire RA editor Ian Wenick, and I'm joined today by my colleague and top deputy, Andrew Forch. Andrew, how are you doing this morning? We've had a little bit of technical difficulties, but we're on the right track now.
I'm just happy we've all got it sorted out. I've been instructed to kind of lean into my mic so that the audio is clear here. So we've got some work throughs, but feeling good. And yeah, happy to be here discussing the week's biggest stories with you.
So Alex is on vacation, and I'm not sure what the odds are that he will end up listening to this episode. I feel like he will, but this will be a chance for me to make all the pop culture references and jokes that I would normally be restrained from doing. But first, before I get into any of that, how about we talk a little bit about some of the biggest stories of the week? And maybe, Andrew, there is a story that you wrote which popped up based on a golf that I was watching over the weekend. So how about you share a little bit about the big story that you published on Monday and how on earth this feature came to be?
Yeah, as much of our kind of listener contingent will know, the Masters was this weekend in Augusta, Georgia. And we actually had a somewhat rare occurrence, which was a Masters marker, which is a person who does not compete in the tournament, but they basically just need someone to keep the score when you have an odd number of golfers. And this year, that marker was an RIA CIO, Michael McDermott, CEO, chief executive of Cavmere Capital Management in Wayne, Pennsylvania. And as I will preface this by saying, I'm not a major golf guy. I don't know the game well. I don't know the lingo, and I wasn't watching on Saturday, frankly. But I got the text from Ian to check this out, and it seemed fascinating. And you know, what I've come to learn about Masters markers is that they become generally fan favorites. People who watch the Masters think it's very cool when a slightly less perhaps gifted and slightly less kind of successful professional golfer gets a chance to go up against the game's greatest stars on the biggest stage like the Masters. And so social media popped off somewhat on Saturday with McDermott getting a lot of love and a lot of curiosity about, you know, just who is this guy? He's not on my card. And he teed off with Tom Kim and I think had a pretty impressive showing, with Kim telling the Associated Press he believes that McDermott shot in the 70s, which is a very fair score, with Kim himself shooting a 72 in Saturday's third round, followed up by a 79 on Sunday. And so that's the gist of it. And you know, it turns out McDermott, you don't get to be the Masters marker just by chance. He is a fantastic semi-professional golfer with a kind of long and storied career. And he's a member at Augusta. And so Augusta chose him to be the marker. He got the nod and he went out there on Saturday.
Yeah. I mean, I'm curious what you think about my theory for why this resonated so well with our readers, because this was one of the most read, most engaged with stories of the year. And I think it's interesting to note that, like, McDermott was not allowed to talk to us. The Augusta National does not let the markers talk to the press. So we weren't able to get his experience. But I think the reason that he's resonated so much with our readership is because he's almost living out the fantasy that a lot of these advisors have. I mean, look, you know, advisors play a lot of golf. Like, there's a little bit of a stereotype, it's a little bit of a joke, but this guy's living the dream, right? Like, he's got the Augusta National membership. He's a scratch golfer. I mean, he was a decorated collegiate golfer at St. Joseph's University. It's kind of like how guys have that fantasy of being the action hero. I mean, it's funny, like, literally one of my best friends, like, he plays PGA Tour 2K25, and he's got his Kenny Powers avatar, and Tom Kim from Saturday is his main rivals, and they're playing on the fake Augusta National. So, you know, he's living out this kind of like fantasy hero image thing that I feel like a lot of advisors probably naturally have. And so I'm curious kind of what you kind of discovered through the reporting process on this and what you think of that kind of fan theory.
Yeah, I think you're spot on. I think it's our readers, they're watching the Masters, they're golfers themselves, and they want to live vicariously through this. I mean, this is he became kind of the envy of golf enthusiasts around the world basically overnight.
So you had that story pop out. That was obviously fun to report on. What would you say, just kind of zooming out, what do you think makes features like this resonate with our readers so well?
Well, yeah, they're fun. They're human interests. You get to know the people that you're working with. So we can take things beyond, mergers and acquisitions and investment management and kind of numbers and figures. And you get to know the characters in this business. And they're great people and they're interesting people and they've done interesting things outside of their offices and their boardrooms. I mean, look at how well our new kind of past lives feature has been received. We've had a lot of really, really fascinating subjects to that and a lot of great feedback. And I think it just speaks to the fact that readers are interested in the human interest stories and kind of the personalities behind these big brand businesses that we're covering every day.
So when Alex is in the office and hosting these podcasts, he's usually playing the role of interviewer, interviewing me, interviewing you. This is a little bit different. We're going to have to kind of take turns a little bit. So how about I take off my 1920 style press hat and microphone? I'm going to pass it over to you now.
Yeah, well, thanks. It's good to be on the other side of the table for once here. Yeah, maybe if you could just tell us about, I think you had a pretty major story yesterday go out. Why don't you tell us about what that is, what happened with Orion, the technology vendor, and maybe just little hits on kind of why that's important for readers to know about.
Perfect. So I'll give a little bit of background and then maybe you can start throwing some follow-ups at me. So for our readers and listeners, on Wednesday afternoon, we're taping on Thursday morning, we broke that Orion, which is one of the largest technology vendors in the wealth management business, informed a number of its employees that they are being laid off. Now, the extent of these layoffs are not immediately clear. We found from some of our sources that Orion CEO and Natalie Wolfson and the company leadership, they were asked by employees how many people got let go and they declined to specify. So the exact number is a mystery. And this is the third time in the last 4 years that we've seen Orion make cutbacks. So there's a little bit of background there. So maybe, Andrew, how about you share a little bit about what Orion does and then maybe just team me up a little bit to give a little bit of the background of what's been going on at the company the last couple of years.
Yeah, well, I frankly, but before I forget, I just want to quickly ask. I mean, how much of this do you think has to do with where the business is at and kind of normal business cycle versus what's going on today in markets and in economics? I mean, is your read on this that this is kind of, I mean, you said it's been three in the last 4 years, right? So how much of this is kind of going according to plan and maybe would have happened otherwise. Do you have a read on how much of this is related to kind of current events like this month?
So I just from the reporting that I've done, I think that this goes back to more of a longer term strategy from the company. So let's just back up a little bit. So basically what Orion does is it has two kind of core business elements. It has its core portfolio management and performance reporting software, so telling you how your investments are doing. And they have a large investment outsourcing business that packages and sells model portfolios. So Orion has been backed by some form of private equity for going on a decade now. TA Associates has backed Orion since 2015. And then Genstar Capital invested in Orion in 2020 when Orion bought Brinker Capital, which was an investment outsourcer. So the last couple of years have been a lot of shifts at the company, and there's been some friction between the management and the workforce. So the main thing to note is that Natalie Wolfson, so she came over to Orion in 2023 from AssetMark, a rival investment outsourcing business. She replaced Eric Clark, who was the founder of the company. And now Eric still does some work with the firm, but on a day-to-day basis, Natalie's running the show. And basically, within a month of her starting at the company, there was a real clash between her and the workforce because Orion tried to roll out a return to office policy that was met with a lot of protestation from the workforce, including a petition being circulated. Orion shut down internal employee access to that petition. A lot of this stuff got out and was leaked to me. We reported on that. And so basically, that's a little bit of background on just kind of where the company's been. Now, what was very interesting was that last year, around June, we broke that Orion began hiring staff in India, which, you know, has generally lower labor costs than the United States. And at the time, Orion said that it wasn't necessarily connected to a reduction in force. But it's tough when you zoom out now. Like, you look at both the fact that you have a private equity firm that's been invested in this company much longer than the typical 4 to 7 year time horizon, and this decision to hire employees in a lower labor cost base, you know, it makes sense strategically where these layoffs would fit in. So I don't view this as something that's like a snap reaction to the markets and what we've seen with tariff mania. I feel like this is just, and that's based on both kind of sources and just drawing some inferences, that this is all part of a longer-term strategic play by Orion and its private equity backers to drive efficiencies in the company.
Something of a vibes-based assessment there, but I think you're probably spot on as usual. One interesting facet to this, and we're starting to see this more, is firms not disclosing the number of layoffs that have occurred. I just find that to be a little bit of an interesting wrinkle with this type of story, and the fact that management there did not disclose, including to its employees, the number of them that were laid off. I just find that interesting. Do you have a particular read on that? Is that unusual for firms?
It's interesting because, like, I don't want to, and we talk about inferences and kind of vibes-based stuff, like, I don't want to read too much into that necessarily, because Orion is a private company, not necessarily obligated to disclose these kinds of things. But yeah, I did find it a little bit interesting that they wouldn't tell employees kind of what's going on, and I don't know what kind of effect that could have on morale. We don't necessarily know yet what specific divisions were affected. But no, I mean, it's an interesting point, and I don't have a lot of track record in my reporting career dealing with that kind of dynamic internally at a company, let alone them telling the press about it.
Yeah, fair enough. Well, it's been a big week in news for private equity-backed wealth managers and wealth management-adjacent businesses. Ian, I want to ask you about another big story that you had, which was about Focus Financial Partners. Kind of tipping maybe a bit of a retreat potentially from its international businesses. I know they've got some holdings in Switzerland. They've got some holdings in Canada. Can you walk us through that story and just tell us a little bit about kind of what's going on there this week?
Yeah, I mean, it basically sounds like every story that I've written this week has just been to tee myself up for explainers on this podcast. So, background, Focus Financial Partners. If you're a regular listener to our show, you know a little bit about them. They're one of the biggest backers of wealth managers in the United States. They are controlled by private equity firm Clayton, Dubilier & Rice, which took the company off the public markets in 2023 in a take-private deal that valued Focus at about $7 billion. Focus has been looking to cull down, not necessarily cull, but consolidate its network of holdings into a network of hubs. And so there are a couple of major hubs that are U.S. wealth managers, Focus Partners Wealth, Covitz, SCS. They have a business management firm hub, and they have a hub for its Canadian businesses. And so Focus, when it was still publicly traded and led by founder Rudy Adolf, along with co-founders Jeannie Kodialam and Lenny Chang, after they IPO'd, they made a move to expand out of the U.S., out of Canada, into the United Kingdom, and into Australia, and into Switzerland, and they bought a Swiss wealth manager called Octagon Group, which at the time managed $5.3 billion in assets in 22. Today it manages around $6.2. And so what we broke on Tuesday, actually no, not Tuesday, also on Wednesday, was that Focus is planning to sell some of its international wealth management businesses. And we saw that based on sources and investor materials in which Focus said that it is looking to rationalize its international holdings. And what I was told by a source with good knowledge of the situation is that a potential sale of Octagon might be a priority for Focus over the UK businesses, over the Australian businesses. And so this is one thing where, again, I don't think it's necessarily a reaction to like the market stuff that we're seeing. I think it's more of a strategic decision led by the private equity firm, which makes sense, right? Like you want to consolidate around your core businesses. And if you have this one outpost based out of Switzerland, I get why management would find that superfluous. So that's kind of my top-down read of the situation.
Yeah, it's interesting, and I think your you know the kind of your read through of what you've got from sources is made more interesting given what happened earlier this year when Prime Quadrant, that's about a $16 billion Canadian multifamily office that had been a Focus partner, bought itself out of its partner firm agreement with Focus. So I think that lends credibility to the idea that this is a broader retreat. Of course, it does look like they have. They're committed to kind of staying in Canada to some degree, given that they've got a Canadian consolidation hub in Cardinal Point Capital Management. But yeah, again, just another interesting data point that kind of fits with the overall direction that you've laid forth.
So, I think what's nice is that you also had a pretty big deal scoop this week. So, maybe you can kind of walk us through what happened down in Richmond that you were able to break on Monday.
Yeah, so Carey Street Partners is a about a $10 billion RIA and broker-dealer. They've got a bit of a kind of wealth management business and an asset management business. Has sold a slight majority interest to a private equity firm called CIVC Partners. They're kind of middle market focused, business services focused firm. They've been around a long time, but they have not made any. Kind of formal investments in the independent RIA space. And so this deal for CIVC represents its first big RIA holding. And for Carey Street, this is interesting because they've had some backers previously. They had a boutique investment bank called Ducera Partners, which held a minority stake, and they had Atlantic Union Bank, which invested through a deal a couple of years back when Carey Street acquired that bank's RIA subsidiary. One of those backers, I believe Atlantic Union, was able to exit Carey Street entirely. Ducera was able to sell down, so we've got some liquidity provided there for its existing backers, including their CEO Joe Schmuckler said they've got about 35 employee and executive shareholders, so some liquidity offered to those folks and to the firm's previous institutional backers, and now they've got fresh capital with which to fund growth. Build out service offerings, complete acquisitions. You know, Carey Street's a little interesting because they do both acquisitions of other independent RIAs and they recruit advisor teams out of wirehouses. So kind of a dual track inorganic growth strategy there. And yeah, they've got a new war chest. It's a big deal for them.
Well, what I find fascinating is that CIVC, this is their first RIA business, RIA investment, but they have a lot of track record, a long track record of investing in the insurance brokerage space. And I think the one thing that we've kind of picked up from talking to experienced M&A sources is that a lot of people draw parallels between the insurance brokerage business and the RIA business, both in terms of the opportunity for consolidation, the track record of ownership, the institutionalization. And so I wonder if a company like CIVC is making this move based on seeing that this insurance brokerage consolidation playbook is ripe for the picking there.
Yeah, I think you're spot on. And, you know, I had a conversation with CIVC partner Mark McManus earlier this week. We're going to have a story up shortly here on that. And, you know, he basically made that same comparison directly. I mean, he mentioned, you know, I asked because he said, you know, we've been looking at the RIA space for the better part of a decade, right? And that always makes me curious. I mean, most of the big kind of platforms have already gone through one or multiple periods of private equity ownership. You know, and for CIVC to be entering the party, you know, do you not feel a little bit late to it? And he said, no, you know, we see comparisons to insurance when that kind of growth curve is met and consolidation curve is measured in decades, not in years. And you know, from his perspective, they're just waiting for the right opportunity, I think. You know, he said they evaluated a lot of firms, never found anything that was quite right until just now.
So we have just a couple seconds until we have to say goodbye. And so, inspired by our good friend Michael McDermott and his experience over the weekend, I'm going to ask you one quick off-topic question. And that is, if you can get called up to participate in one major sporting event, with the caveat that you have at least decent baseline skills, like what Michael has with golf, what event would you choose?
Great question. I would like to think about it a little more than a couple seconds. A knee-jerk reaction, starting third baseman for the Boston Red Sox in the 2025 World Series. I'd lace him up right now. I think there are some good. You could pick some Olympic sports. That'd be a lot of fun, I think. Big stage, get some travel in. I think Olympics would be great. I don't know what my sport would be. It's a standard answer. It's got to be the World Series.
I don't know what your UZR would be, but I feel like it's probably not very good.
No.
All right, that's all the time we have. Thank you for listening to our latest edition of This Week in Wealth, and we will see you again next week. Thanks for listening, guys.